No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.
The proud defender of the American dream, Rick Smith. Since I'm playing slow and gauges, and the days of fate increase, walk down through the middle ages, predators kept going through changes, and then the renaissance came, the times continue to change, nothing stayed the same, but there were
welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So we're counting down to the deadline, to the shutdown. And again, you know, I keep coming back to, you look at this Dreamer issue. It is mind-blowing to me that we can't get this done, can't get this right, can't get it passed through. Because, look, it's something that the vast majority of people in this country see and have said, look, we want them to stay. We want it to be legal. We want to end this. Stop pushing us to the brink. Stop with the 24-style shutdowns. Look, we've had four of these continuing resolutions going on number five. At some point, we need functional, sane, rational, do your freaking job government. It's just plain nuts. But here to share a little of his thoughts on maybe where we should be going with this immigration issue and also with the Dreamers. I've asked Tom Jawitz to come talk with us. He's the Vice President of Immigration Policy there at the Center for American Progress. Tom, thanks for taking time for us.
Sure. Thanks so much.
So, I mean, I keep coming back to this. Why can't we just get this done? Over 70% of the population in this country thinks this should be done already.
Yeah, I mean, it's bigger than that even. 70% is probably a few months old. You know, the latest polls that are coming out are showing that up to 86, 87% of the American public supports the idea of providing Dreamers with the opportunity to stay in this country. More and more people in Congress, on both the Democratic and Republican sides of the aisle, are saying this is an imperative, it has to happen, and are saying that really the way to get this done is to focus on the problem at hand, right? So the president basically, after creating this problem in September, said Congress has to fix it. And after they made a lot of progress toward a deal, several deals actually, he sort of rejected them all and instead threw back kind of this really crazy, expansive wish list of just radically reshaping our immigration system going forward. And that's just not going to work in this Congress. All that does is put more difference on the table. And what people are starting to realize is you need to focus in on what the problems are right now. And at this point, if you look at what Republican leadership is saying in the Senate, for instance, you look at what Democrats as well are saying for the most part, focus on protecting Dreamers. You know, if you want to look at some smart, sensible border security measures, that's possible. Those two things could get you across the finish line in Congress.
Are we against the idea of border security? I mean, because I've got friends who are saying, well, you Democrats just want everybody running across the border. You don't want any borders. You want all these people coming here. Do we want border security?
Yeah, no one disagrees with the idea that we want border security, but it has to happen in a conversation where you're doing something that makes sense for the country, makes sense for border residents, makes sense for the American taxpayer, right? So the Department of Homeland Security under this administration just reported a few months ago that the border is more secure and harder to cross physically than it ever has been in the last 45 years, right? So that's the baseline we're working off of. And when you listen to what Homeland Security says, what government reports say, what experts on the border say, throwing up hundreds of miles of additional barriers, physical barriers, a wall, won't make a difference, really. Investing in something like our ports of entry, for instance, which is where the vast majority of illegal drugs that are coming into the country come through, that's a smart investment, right? If you want to stop fentanyl from coming into the country, you don't put up additional miles of wall. You try and make sure you have the right ports inspectors there, you have the right customs officers at the ports so that they're not overworked and they're not just weaving cars through because they don't have the ability and the staffing to actually stop more and inspect them appropriately.
Yeah, and I would also argue not just, on the southern border, but, on the east and west coasts as well, more port security, maybe checking a lot more of the containers coming in. I read something that we check less than 1% of the shipping containers that come into this country.
Yeah, and actually food security is a major issue. And if you look at where the investments are made nowadays, they're absolutely not made in those areas. There's a lot we could do that would actually make the American public safer, healthier, and be much more cost effective than doing the kinds of things that are being proposed. So there are areas of bipartisan agreement, no question. I would take one step back from your intro, though, and just say that the disagreements in Congress right now and the situation happening in the House of Representatives while they're waiting for Rand Paul to stop his objections, the unanimous consent, and allow for a vote in the Senate to go over to the House is not something that is solely focused on what Democrats in the House are demanding with respect to Dreamers. I mean, there is, it appears, a massive defection taking place among House Republicans who simply don't like the idea that the budget deal that was cut in the Senate would invest tremendously in discretionary domestic spending, things right. like just making sure we're investing in education and proper health care in this country. And so the reason why we're at this impasse potentially in the House is because 50, 60, 70 Republicans may well end up just defecting from the Speaker and rejecting the bill for that reason.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit earlier, about the end of these hard caps that they won during the sequester era, that you just go, the time to argue this stuff would have been when you were spending the money. Stop already.
Yeah, before the trillion dollar deficit created through this tax bill. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I do find it ironic that you've got Rand Paul, who's taking this hard line tonight, and yet he voted for that tax heist.
Yeah, where was that fire then?
Exactly. But here's the thing. You were talking about if they wanted to get this stuff done. I truly believe that the president doesn't want anything to actually get done. That he likes the chaos and he likes the division, and the base really just eats it up when nothing gets done, especially on the immigration issue, because we can keep beating that horse to death. And looking at this as we move down the road, though, it eventually has to get done, because the longer this takes out, the longer this draws out, the more these folks who are in limbo right now are harmed, right?
Yeah, I mean, so a couple of things on that I'll say. First of all, I think there's absolutely good reason to wonder whether the administration really wants to fix this problem. After all, it's this administration that created the problem. I actually just did a piece up on our website, AmericanProgress.org, a couple of days ago that runs through five things the president himself, without Congress, could do to ameliorate some of the harm that he's caused and to stem the problems going forward for at least some period of time. But separate and apart from that, yeah, that's right. There are, on average, about 122 people who have been losing their DACA status every single day since September 5th. So about 19,000 so far have lost their protections. Beginning on March 6th, that number is going to increase dramatically to about 1,000 people a day. You've got about 900 of these folks who are working in the military, who are enlisted in the military, and about 20,000 who are in classrooms every single day as teachers and educators. These are individuals who, when they lose their DACA on that day, they lose their work authorization. Their employer knows the date on which their work authorization expires, and they're going to lose their jobs, right? They're going to lose, in most states, their driver's licenses. In many states, their in-state tuition. They're going to lose, in many states, their ability to just go to public colleges and universities entirely. South Carolina, Georgia have those kinds of limits in place. And so, there are real human consequences. Does this have to get solved? I mean, is it an inevitability in that sense? I don't think so. I don't think we should count on anything being inevitable. I think there could be really, really dramatic and terrible human costs to inaction that may well result if people don't get engaged and really, bring some heat to these members of Congress who need to feel the pressure.
Yeah, but here's the thing: you've got a segment of the electorate, and I would argue that's the 36% that still support this president, saying that, we should be, get the big bus and shipping people out of here. Why is that a bad idea?
Well, I mean, why it's a bad idea? It's a bad idea for a lot of reasons. I mean, for first start, I think we really do need to address just the moral imperative of, sort of protecting communities and protecting families. These are individuals who, in the DACA community in particular, for instance, have by definition lived in the United States since they were children and have lived here for at least 10 years.
Right.
So they're just, parts of our families and our communities are parts of our workforce. But more broadly, it'd be really damaging to the economy in the country as a whole and in all these different states and industries in which they work. Take one step back and think about what it would be like for the children in the classrooms where their teachers, 20,000 teachers and educators are working. To have their teachers no longer be able to come to work in the morning anymore because they were forced to lose their jobs as a result of losing DACA and potentially also being deported as well. I mean, that's something that will have an impact on how those children view the world, view their country. And that's something we should be concerned about as a country.
Yeah, but I get this a lot from the folks on the right who are saying, look, these people are illegal. They've broken the law. They're all criminals. So we've dehumanized them. A segment of our population has dehumanized them to the point where they're just criminals and they need to be treated as such. And how do you get through to someone who has that kind of a mindset? Because, I'm sure you've got people in Congress who think this way. And how do you come to a deal or a position, you know, a policy, a resolution to all of this?
You know, I think probably the best way to approach those kinds of situations, and it's true, it's no question that's something that I think is something you have to face, and it's something that affects not just the issue of Dreamers, but with immigration more broadly. It really does come down in a lot of cases to telling people stories and having personal connections, real meaningful personal connections with individuals, and that takes a lot of time. That's why organizers who are on the ground every single day in these communities and are working to get people out there and get them to engage, with people who don't have the same views as them, and to understand and appreciate what they're bringing to their communities. Has such a hard job ahead of them, but it's such a critically important job because, something about community. There are recent studies that have come out, and this is actually it's pretty consistent. Studies have come out showing that in many cases the view of immigrants is the worst in communities that have the least access to immigrants. Right. And so the less contact you actually have with immigrants, the more likely you are to be fearful or resentful of immigrants in the country. And so that's something that I think, one, demographically just, will change and is changing right now. And it's some of those places where there is that change taking place, where you see some of that tension. But there are communities on the other side of that as well. There are communities, Crete, Nebraska, Storm Lake, Iowa, communities in these, really rural states, rural parts of the state that have actually seen their communities shift over time and have seen immigrants come in. And they're at the point now where they're past that tipping point and they can actually recognize that the immigrants who are in their communities are extremely, contributing members of their communities. They are in many ways the reason why the communities have not shrunk and had to close their school districts and merge with other school districts. The reasons why the communities are so vibrant. I mean, that's the kind of place where you start to see people, sort of like get to the other side of the issue and realize that immigrants are part of the future of this country, just like they're part of our past.
Yeah, and they're not all part of MS-13, right?
Yes, I think that's very much true.
Yeah, because I keep hearing that a lot, too. Oh, they're all MS-13, and they're going to cut your children's head off.
Yeah, I mean, so a couple of things are happening there. I mean, one, whenever that's discussed in the context of DACA recipients, I mean, it's important to remember that DACA recipients, again, I almost hesitate to say this, but I mean, these are kids who are raised in this country. They've gone through our school system, many times from elementary school to secondary school through college. In order to get DACA, they have applied for work authorization. They've gone through background checks, security checks periodically every 18 months, every 2 years, passing these background checks. And so these are individuals who have been thoroughly vetted. More generally, you're starting to hear from Attorney General Sessions, from the President, references to MS-13 in connection with these unaccompanied young children from Central America who have been coming to the United States over the last 2 years in increasing numbers, or at least historically. The numbers aren't that high right now. But these are kids who are, for the most part, fleeing MS-13, right? These are individuals who actually, by and large, when they get their applications to request protection, especially if they're represented by counsel, are often able to make strong cases for protection in this country, and that's because they were, in many cases, being threatened by gang violence in their home countries.
So let me ask you, as this is going forward, because obviously this isn't going to be settled anytime in the next few days, are you confident that something will be resolved? And what do you see the time frame being? Because, as you pointed out earlier, the longer we get down the road, the more people who are going to be harmed by this, especially when we get into March and April. Are you hopeful?
So I've been doing immigration policy for long enough that I would absolutely never say that I'm confident or think this is inevitable. This is hard work, and it requires people to be vigilant. And that's why I think you see, immigration groups, the Dreamers themselves, in Congress every single day, in communities every single day, trying to raise awareness about the importance of this issue. So that's going to have to happen and just keep happening. I think we're going to need people to sort of not just observe this and sort of start to learn about it. I think we have seen a real, real growth in the awareness of this issue among the American public, but I don't know that we've yet sort of crossed the threshold where it's something that people have personalized and decided that, that they themselves need to be fighting for. And I think that if and when we get to that point, people begin to see, to the extent that there are people out there who think of themselves as being the sort of the hashtag resistance, right? This is that fight right now. In many ways, this is one of the great civil rights fights of our time. And I think that once we'll start to see themselves as part of that fight, we'll have the energy we need to drive ourselves to a victory in Congress.
We'll see. Is it fair that the Democrats have been taking so many arrows over not, making a stronger stand during the last shutdown? I mean, you know, there were protests out in front of Chuck Schumer's house, I guess, saying he's not going to sleep until this issue is done. Is it fair to attack them on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for starters, you know, I don't by and large think this is a partisan issue. I think the groups that are fighting for this, and I've been in a lot of meetings with a lot of Dreamers who have been throwing some of those arrows. And, you know, when they get heat, they respond with something which I think pretty compelling, which is, you know, I'm fighting for my life. I'm fighting for my ability to stay in the country that I've always been in. I'm fighting for my sister, my brother, my cousin. And so I think it's personal in that sense, in the realist sense and in the right sense. You know, how the shutdown played out in the end. It seemed like there was a strong plan getting into it. I'm not sure there's a terribly strong plan getting out of it. And I don't know that we actually gained a lot of strength for the issue as a result of that.
Nope.
But I think we've lived for another day. And you know, frankly, what we're seeing in the House side right now potentially is that other day.
Yeah, I'm hoping at some point this comes to resolution because we've been. You know, I would argue most of my lifetime. I mean, you go back to the 80s and we had immigration policy that they thought they fixed. And we've had these, you know, every president's gone through it. I mean, you heard Bill Clinton say it. You heard George W. Bush say it. You heard Obama say it. At some point, resolution has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we had a major overhaul of immigration in 1990. In 1986, we had the big amnesty, civil no-go from Ronald Reagan. And then in 1990, we had the Immigration Act, which did reform our immigration laws. We really haven't had any major reforms to our immigration system since 1990, other than enforcement-only provisions that in many ways were extremely punitive, extremely counterproductive, and really made the problem worse. I mean, a lot of the laws that President Clinton signed, frankly, in 1996 on immigration are pretty directly responsible for a lot of the humanity in our system today and the fact that people are the fact that we've built to an undocumented population as large as we have it today.
Yeah, well. Last line of questioning I've got for you, I always ask people, if what we have is broken and it's not working, what should we be moving for? If you had the chance to write this, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, I think by and large, you want to have an immigration system that makes sense for the American public, makes sense for American business, makes sense for American families. You want to look at our immigration system today. You want to see how it functions. Because in many ways, we have an immigration system that works in some ways. It's just that it doesn't work legally, right? It works sort of extra legally. What you want is a system that looks at the realities of our economy, the realities of families, and builds a system around that so that people can work their way through the system and they're not working around the system. And so that's I think, kind of the overarching principle, I think. And then once you do that, you get out of the stigma of people breaking the law and being, undocumented and all that stuff, and you have people who actually have a plausible way of working through the system. So they can come here right now. If your brother's a U.S. citizen and you want to come here, you can be waiting for decades, 30, 40 years in order to come into this country. That's not a very functional way to actually have a system, to come into the country. If you've got, family here, strong family, and you've got an opportunity and a willingness to sort of work hard and contribute.
Yeah, good point. Tom, I appreciate the time, the thoughts. I look forward to talking to you again. I'm sure this is not going away anytime soon. I'd love to have you back again to keep us up to date.
Sure. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. If you want to check out Tom's writings, we'll get a link over at thericksmithshow.com of how you can check out his articles on what we should be doing and what we can be doing and what this president could do. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Wants me to give my money to someone like you. But I do believe in what a crazy man can do.
Yeah! Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.